as I considered what to share with you this morning, I was drawn back to the basics, and something we all need to be reminded of, and I'm not exempt. I wish I could say I've mastered them. I'm, you know, like a professional who helps people with some of this stuff, and you would like to think that, the teacher has figured it all out, but really just come to you as kind of as one beggar telling another beggar where to find food. Not that there isn't food, but sometimes, again, we just need to kind of reorientate ourselves. So, just kind of introducing today, just maybe some of us need just to consider a little bit of a realignment or a major realignment in terms of what we're talking about. I assure you that when we are paying attention to what's most important, we experience more of the abundant life Jesus has promised. In fact, there's more references to joy in Scripture than there are to eternal life. But sometimes it's like, oh, are we really experiencing that abundance? And so we're going to focus on three things. One, Jesus' summary of what he considers most important. We're going to contemplate our understanding of the soul, and then three, we're going to consider the trouble with hurry. So first, I just want to get to the basics, and that is we find in one reference in Mark 12, where Jesus says, the most important one, answer Jesus, is this, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. I think the struggle, at least in my life, is we hear something so much, and for me, kind of since I was a kid, that you kind of miss how much is really in these few verses. But basically, the summary of the law involves our whole being, and Jesus points out the various parts. So we see we have heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then we also have three key relationships we're to pay attention to, relationship with God, neighbor, and self. So it's very holistic in terms of, at least in my profession, these areas are constantly being hammered of, we can't just isolate mental health. If we do, we kind of do so at a loss. So I've found we are generally more familiar or comfortable with our heart, our emotions, our thoughts, our physical bodies, but this thing we call the soul, it's a little more difficult to define. I would actually get you guys, if we had a little time, just kind of interact with each other. Well, how would you define the soul? Because I would say, in general, most Christians would say, don't know. It's in the greatest commandment. I mean, it's the summary of the whole bit, but it's like, what's the soul? And I don't want to pretend that it can be simply or easily understood, but I did want to introduce a couple thoughts related to it. And first, as a mental health professional who has studied psychology, I'm drawn to reflect on the fact that this field of study comes from two Greek words, and that one being psyche, or breath, spirit, soul, and two being logia, or study of something. And therefore, it could be argued basically that psychology is actually the study of the soul. And again, historically then, not so just isolated into mental health. So it's been said that the soul is the ing of our thinking, feeling, doing, relating. Like it impacts every aspect of who we are and what we're doing. I've appreciated the teaching of a man named Dallas Willard on the soul. He suggests that at the center of our being actually lies our will. And next, he would argue, would be our mind. And historically, emotions weren't separated from our mind. So the second sort of circle would be our mind. So will, mind. And next, he would say our physical bodies. These are like the power packs that provide the ability to carry out our will and our mind, our thoughts. And then he would suggest this outer ring, this fourth ring, is actually our soul. And the soul is what integrates our entire being. Therefore, a healthy soul is an integrated soul, where we see this alignment to carry out from our will, through our thoughts and emotions, and our physical bodies, and it's out of our soul that we relate to God, others, and ourselves. So to properly attend to our souls is to prioritize the first and greatest commandment. But then there's this problem with this thing I mentioned a few minutes ago called hurry. Maybe you guys are the most peaceful, chill people. I mean, you live in Comox Valley, you're on Vancouver Island, you're islanders. But generally speaking, anxiety, for instance, at least in North America, is going through the roof. And I'm not trying to say anxiety and hurry are the same thing, but what's with this like constant sense of hurry? And the following words come from a pastor who used to serve at one of America's largest churches. His name's John, and he was seeking support from his mentor at the time, who was Dallas Willard. And you'll get a sense in the reference to the story how long ago this was. But John says, "Not long after moving to Chicago, I called a wise friend to ask for some spiritual direction. I described the pace of life in my current ministry. The church where I serve tends to move at a fast clip. I also told them about our rhythms of family life. We're in the van driving soccer league, piano lessons, school orientation night years. And I told them about the present condition of my heart as best as I could discern it. And I asked them, what did I need to do to be spiritually healthy?" And there was a long pause. And then these words, "You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." And just another long pause. And John says, "Okay, I've written that one down. And that's a good one. Now what else is there? I had many things to do, and this was a long-distance call. So I was anxious to cram as many units of spiritual wisdom into the least amount of time possible." And then there was another long pause. And Dallas said, "There's nothing else. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." So reflecting on the advice from his friend, John says, "I've concluded that my life and the well-being of the people I serve depends on following his prescription, for hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our day. Hurry destroys souls." And he states, "If you want to follow someone, you can't go faster than the one who is leading. Following Jesus cannot be done at a sprint. Jesus was often busy, but he was never hurried. Being busy is an outer condition. Being hurried is a sickness of the soul." So the health of our souls must be a top priority, for Jesus asked a pretty important question about it. In Matthew 16, we read, "What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul?" And perhaps this question isn't to be heard as a warning about our eternal destiny. That's kind of how I always thought about it. But perhaps Jesus cares about our souls in the here and now. And could we lose our very selves, our souls, in the midst of pursuing all our goals? So in short, hurry affects our ability to fulfill the greatest commandment, and it makes it difficult to love. At least to love well. So we've identified the main objective, perhaps increased our understanding of the soul and this problem with hurry. And like I said earlier, I teach and seek to live this stuff. I'm aware that tending to our souls and reducing hurry, it strengthens resilience in pastors, it's correlated with fruitfulness in congregations, and that missionaries who actually apply this decrease their rate of attrition or not making it on the field. But awareness isn't enough, right? Awareness is important, but there must be a shift in our core beliefs and behavior. So there isn't a quick fix. But I did discover an invitation in the passage that Lori read for us about this feeding of the 5,000. So there's these near impossible odds of feeding 5,000 people. And then we're introduced to this boy who has 5 loaves and 5 fish. And it's just interesting, at least in the NIV, sort of just sort of redundantly emphasizes both cases. They're small. There might be five, but they're both small. So there's not a whole lot here. And what struck me as I was reading through this is he had his lunch taken care of. He was good to sit and listen. He didn't have to share. And he must have known that if he did, it wasn't going to go very far. But he offers it to Jesus, and Jesus is the one who multiplies his offering. And I often forget, or at least I don't live like that the needs around are just far greater than I will ever be able to meet on my own. But I can offer my resources, whether it's time, energy, gifts, to Jesus in faith, and that he will multiply them. And again, that's easier said than done. But kind of caused me to reflect, at the end of the day, can I say I've offered the fish and the loaves that I have. Beyond this fact, I actually no longer actually living out the first and greatest commandment, perhaps. So the trouble is I'm often distracted by goals. Nothing wrong with goals, nothing wrong with hard work, but the trouble is not to be mastered by them, and we often are when we're caught up in hurry. So eliminating hurry may not come naturally, but I just want to offer just three practical considerations as we kind of wrap up today. One is, when Jesus was on earth, he did not heal everyone. Just a simple truth. What's the standard you set for yourself? Probably endless needs around you. How do you discern that? Do we live like we're more capable than Jesus? Two is, self-care is not selfishness. It feels like it sometimes, right? If you're a parent or you have a sibling or a good friend, it just feels like, oh, I'm feeling so selfish. Not necessarily a good guide, but just wanted to point out this thing on the airplane that when we travel, right, there's this oxygen mask and there's some instructions that come along with the introduction, right? Like, don your own mask first. Ironically, I think sometimes when we hear a lot about more and more about breathing these days, and even in the literature, breathing's been part of the church since ancient times. The sense of breathing slows us down and helps us remember God, who is spirit. The same word for Hebrew in Hebrew for spirit is breath. And historically in the church, there's a sense of, as I breathe, I recognize my dependence on God. So even if it's just slowing down to, like, who am I, whose strength, who am I dependent on? So don your own mask first, or at least be present enough to not just be caught up in the hurry. And then know what restores your emotional energy. I work with a number of folks serving and doing amazing things around the planet, but they're just completely spent. And when you ask some of these people about, like, what restores your emotional energy, I kind of have no idea, because it's been so long. So I don't know what that is for you guys, whether it's just reading a good book. For some of you, it might be going for a run, and for some of you guys, that sounds the most horrid thing ever. And whatever it is, but maybe caring for our souls involves actually thinking about what restores my emotional energy. And I'm not trying to say to do that apart from Jesus, but this is not, it's not divided or separate from that. Finally, I just want to leave you with this idea of receiving the gift of the Sabbath. And leave you with this quote that, in a positive way, continues to haunt me. He says, this guy named Mark said, "We have swallowed the lie that we cannot rest until our work's all done. But the truth is, the work is never done. The rest of God is not a reward for finishing. It's a sheer gift. Sabbath is not the break we're allotted at the end of completing all our chores, the fulfillment of our obligations. It's the rest we take smack dab in the middle of them, without apology, without guilt, and for no better reason than God told us we could." And from a research perspective, we know that regardless of what a Christian believes, whether like we have to or should do this, those who do it are more resilient. Got that on that. And I believe it would be true for all of us, because Jesus knows something inherently about not being incessantly busy all the time and trusting him to be God. And we do better if we apply this idea of Sabbath not just on a weekly, but also on a daily. Is there moments of your day where you stop as sheer gift just to be still? And as the reference to Psalm 46, no. In the midst of Psalm 46, as we listen to it, like the whole world's falling apart. And there's this like weird verse that we just kind of isolate, be still and know that I am God. But the context is crazy. Be still in the midst of the hurry and know what? God, who God is. So just as we reflect back on the greatest commandment, our understanding of the soul, this trouble with hurry, just what's one thought, idea, practice that just kind of stands out to you? If there is something, just encourage you at some point today, tell someone, talk about it. we generally are, at least under stress, we're prone to just repeat the same pattern. So having some help and encouragement from those around us is so crucial. So thank you for your trust and blessing of being here.